Just like any human runner, you can't just get up one day from hanging out on the couch and go run a 5K. And neither can dogs. Unless you try it. And they're usually, you know, unless they're overweight, that dogs have very good endurance. But that doesn't mean their soft tissue structures are prepared to do a serious run. They'll do it because they're game and they like to have fun, but that doesn't mean they're ready to do that kind of repetitive thing.
In this episode of the RVA Running Man podcast, part two of discussing the tips and the do's and don'ts of running with your dog, I speak with Dr. Patrice Mitch of Canine Sports Medicine and Mobility. Dr. Mitch is triple board certified, with one of her certifications being with the American College of Veterinary Sports Medicine and Rehabilitation. While there are some great tips provided in this episode, please consult your primary vet if you have any health-related concerns for your pet. Welcome, Dr. Mitch from Canine Sports Medicine and Mobility to the RVA Running Man podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Devin. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. And tell me a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I am a veterinarian for a long time. And I initially was a general practitioner, but I had a special interest in chronic pain, which led me to a residency in anesthesiology and analgesia, pain management. And then from there, I learned that there was a whole lot more to managing pain. And so I got interested in orthotic and prosthetic limbs for dogs. So that's braces and prosthetic limbs. And that led me to sports medicine and physical rehabilitation. And so I'm a triple board certified veterinarian. So general practice, anesthesia, and then sports medicine and rehab.
Wow. So what drove you down that path of wanting to get into sports medicine, into veterinarian, being a vet? What was the root of your...
Somewhat circuitous, to say the least. I always knew I wanted to specialize, but I was having a pretty good time in general practice and hard to decide because I like so many things. Okay. And then my own dog developed a lot of problems. And so I started having an interest in managing chronic pain. So she got me into my residency. And then from there, I got an interest in tinkering with things, which is how braces and prosthetic legs came into it. And then it just started spiraling. One of my colleagues was starting a new veterinary specialty college called the Veterinary Sports Medicine and Rehab. So she said, you really ought to do this. So I did that. And it just spiraled. And I ended up in a specialty practice. And now I have a mobile specialty practice. So I work out of a shuttle van that I've converted into a clinic.
What is the difference between a vet that specializes in sports medicine than just like my normal vet that I will go to take my pets to for a normal checkup?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So since I've done both, I've gotten to see both sides of it. So I consider the family veterinarian or the general practitioner to be superheroes. Okay. Because they have to know everything about everything, right? And so they're the front lines, they're the triagers, right? Mm-hmm. The specialty veterinarian has taken a particular area and focused on it with extra training and certifications. So if you do a residency, it's usually a 3 or 4 year additional training on top of your Doctor of Veterinary Medicine certificate. So it's additional training. And then extra certifications have to go beyond that you have to maintain. So in my hands, then for me, I just see sports medicine dogs and chronic pain dogs, whereas a GP does all the other stuff.
Okay. And what is involved with sports medicine as it pertains to dogs and
animals? So in Colorado, I like to say almost all dogs are athletes because we're a really busy state. Lot of athletic dogs, but they may not be professional athletes. And we have a lot of professional sports for dogs. We have agility and fly ball and dock dog, and we have Schutzen dogs and on and on and on. There are probably about 30 different recognized sports for dogs. Mm-hmm. That said, in Colorado, I have dogs that go skiing with their owners. I have dogs that go hiking. I have dogs that do ultra marathons, all kinds of things. Sled dogs are another big sporting specialty for dogs. And so in dogs, we have our long distance athletes and we have our sprinting athletes. So our agility dogs, our flyball dogs are the sprinters, and our sled dogs are our long distance runners.
And I'm a runner. I have two dogs, and I have one that's 14 years old. It's my schnoodle, and I have a pointer shepherd mix. She's about two. So every now and then I would take her on a run with me. Of course, I run in different running groups, and I have a friend that will take her dog on maybe a 10-mile run. And I've always had that question. Of course, I've done my research, but have not talked to an expert such as yourself of whether it's healthy to take dogs on runs over a mile distance, and what the different things we need to look for before just randomly taking our dog on a run. So again, is there some things that we need to look at before just taking our dog out on a run?
Yeah, that's a really good and important question. I think there are several things you have to consider. The first thing that I always think about is breed. There are some breeds that are just not meant for running distances, even a mile. So those are what we call the brachycephalic breeds. Those are the squishy faces, right? Pugs, even boxers, bulldogs, like the English and the French bulldog. I mean, you look at their bodies and they're just not your athlete, right? Per se. I've seen a few, but for the most part, not your athlete. The other breed I would worry about in hotter temperatures or breed types would be those heavy coated dogs or the northern breeds. That's your Samoyed, your Husky, your Malamute. Dogs like that are not well suited in warm environments. On the other hand, Huskies are a common breed to use for sled dog racing. So their body type is good and athletic, but the environment matters. Okay. So that's the first thing I always think about is breed. I also think about age.
Okay.
And that matters a lot too. So your 14-year-old, depending on the health status of your 14-year-old, might be past that running time or maybe do pretty darn short runs. It all depends on their health status, which I can talk about in a moment. And then youngsters. I am a firm believer that distance running is for dogs who are skeletally mature. And what that means is that their growth plates, which is what allows the bones to get longer and longer, have closed. And depending on the breed and whether or not they're spayed or neutered, that's anywhere between about a year and 18 months of age.
What do you consider a distance running dog? I know you mentioned the sports sledding dogs. I'm assuming that in the weather, depending upon weather, like Alaskan Huskies. But what other breeds do you consider distance running dogs? And what is distance when it relates to dogs? Because I know we're completely different. With them having four legs, us having two. What do you consider a distance and distance? Well,
yeah, that's a good question too. So it depends on the breed. So if you're running with a smaller dog, distance is going to be less that they can tolerate than compared to a larger dog. So I might compare your schnoodle, which I don't know if that's a miniature size. Okay, because you can get giant schnauzers and also miniature schnauzer. So your schnoodle is not going to be able to run as far as, say, a greyhound. Right. Just because, one, the greyhound is built for that. But two, they have longer legs. They can cover more distance more easily than a little guy, short legs.
Okay. Okay.
So that makes a big difference is the size of the dog as far as what long distance is. We have sledding dogs that are doing the Iditarod. They are covering a lot of mileage. There are also dogs who are doing ultra marathon runs with their owners. So dogs can do 30, 40 miles. That's possible.
Okay.
But it takes a long time to get a dog to that level, just like it takes a person a long time to get to that kind of mileage. So it's all about the training once you've picked your breed.
You mentioned the squishy face dogs and the age being a factor. What things should a pet owner do to keep those dogs healthy and active?
Oh, yeah, those dogs can do a lot of things. Just that kind of running at distance is not a good idea, especially the dogs with the brachycephalic or squishy face. They do not have the ability to cool themselves or to get proper ventilation. But you can still do a lot with these dogs. You do play with them. You just watch for the signs of fatigue. which is the same thing you would do for a running dog. It's just going to happen sooner with
Okay.
dogs who don't have the proper respiratory system. Same goes for your senior citizens. You have to look for the signs of fatigue. So I might play fetch with my squishy face pug or my 14-year-old schnoodle, but I'd be watching for signs of fatigue. Or if they had pre-existing health problems, then I might have to change from fetch to maybe some nose work, which are things that keep the brain very active, but is easier on the body.
Okay. Now, when you're saying watching for things, watching for fatigue, there and dogs, of course, being a dog owner, I know they communicate differently than humans, and not very many. Unfortunately, there's some dog owners or pet owners that don't understand that language. What are some things that we can look for? Like, for example, if I have a soft tissue issue, I know, but by the way I feel and by the way I walk, is it akin to the same thing with a dog? What are the things that we should look for as far as in signs of fatigue or injury if we're trying to ease our dog into running?
So I'm going to divide those into signs of fatigue and injury in two
Gotcha.
categories.
Okay.
And prior to doing that, I would advise anyone who's going to be running with their dog to make sure they initially do a full physical evaluation for health, also a good orthopedic evaluation. Not all general practitioners are comfortable doing that, so you may have to seek out someone like me who's a sports medicine specialist or a rehab specialist. Once you get a good clean bill of health, you also want to have routine evaluations so that you stay on top of anything that's smoldering. Because you're right, Devin, dogs don't communicate the same, and also dogs want to do what you want to do. And so if you want to go run, the dog's like, I'm fine. And they take off and they go with you, but they might be aggravating an injury, which we do too as athletes, right? We'll gut it out, but we can say, hey, I took that too far. And it was our choice. And we can stop ourselves. But the dog is like, well, I'm still going to go, but they'll pay the price. So I want routine evaluations with a veterinarian or a sports medicine specialist. Now, the next thing is, how do you tell if a dog is fatigued? So a dog that's fatigued will start to slow and not quite be keeping pace with you. They're going to be panting, and one of your best clues is the length and the shape of the tongue. So the longer the tongue gets, the flatter and the wider it gets, that dog is trying desperately to cool, because dogs cool by sweating through their paw pads and by quote unquote sweating through their respiratory tract by panting. So the more that dog has to cool, the more it's going to really get that tongue out there for cooling, more surface area. So watch that tongue, watch for lagging behind you. Those are some of the big signs that dogs will tell you that they're very, very tired.
Okay. And
Go ahead.
okay. Go no, go ahead. Go ahead.
As far as injury goes, like I said, a lot of times they'll hide it. And there's the obvious limping, right? You're like, hey, dog is limping, something's up. But the other thing is watch for your dog when they first get up in the morning or anytime they get up after they've been resting for a time. If they do a few off steps and then kind of warm up, that is a sure sign you've got a soft tissue injury that's smoldering. If they're resting, they get all stiff, right? And then they get up and they got to kind of work it out. The trouble with ignoring that is that if it's a soft tissue injury and they warm up out of it and then they go do their activity again, they keep re-injuring and keep re-injuring until it becomes so chronic and so difficult that I can't fix it anymore. Common one is a biceps tendon, really common injury for dogs.
Okay.
So you want to watch for those subtle changes like a limp, but also a limp that comes and goes after rest.
Okay, so a limp, the limp that comes and goes after rest is one of, I guess, a big
Big
sign
time
that
to
something
me.
is okay.
And that's also true of arthritis. So as dogs get older, they're going to develop arthritis for a variety of reasons. And some of those dogs will be a little stiff first thing in the morning and then warm up. And so that's something that needs to be checked for is arthritis as the dog ages.
And tethering devices. What tethering device is best for a person that runs with their dog.
Yeah, so I take into consideration two things. The first is safety of dog, and the second is safety of person. Not in any particular order, I think they're the same. So safety for both. So you're going to want a hands-free, in my view. That's a better way, is hands-free. But you also want the ability to take a hold of the tether or leash easily if you need to rein the dog in. So you want hands-free, so that's going to be on you, some sort of belt, usually. Okay. That the leash will be attached to. I like to keep it around a 4-foot leash. That way the dog can't get too far away from you, number one. And number two, the longer the leash, there's more of a risk of you tripping on the dog. Mm. So you need to be super careful about that. Dog suddenly sees a bunny and you can suddenly get tripped. So that's bad. The other thing is I don't want the dog to get too far away from me, maybe stray into traffic accidentally if it gets spooked or startled.
Okay.
So that's the belt and the leash. Harness-wise, there are a lot of harnesses on the market, but there are a category of harness that I feel really strongly is not built for a running dog. And these are the ones that are quote-unquote no-pull harnesses.
Okay.
They're really bad for an athlete who's running in them because the way they stop pulling is it comes across the upper upper arm, not forearm, so just below the shoulder. So the dog can't get an adequate extension of the front leg, and that's how you slow them down. Well, if you're going to run, you need all the range of motion of your legs as you can get. And so if you're in a harness that restricts your front legs, you're setting a dog up for injury. So my running dogs should have a harness that allows them free motion of their front legs. And there are like sled dog harnesses that are super nice. They don't restrict. The rough wear people have some really great harnesses that don't restrict. Those are just a couple of types that I like.
That brings up another question. Terrain. Is there a specific terrain that you feel is better suited for a dog and dog paws?
I do. It does depend on where you are. I always look first to be running on grass or a dirt path. I'm cautious with rocky paths because it can cause cuts to the pads. Now you can put dogs in booties to help with that. I'm cautious on ice because the dogs can easily slip on ice and cause soft tissue injuries from slipping. And then also hot asphalt and concrete I already touched on. If you can't hold your hand on that asphalt for more than 5 seconds, it is too hot for your dog's paw pads. I've treated more dogs with burn pads than I'd prefer to talk about. It's so many. So it's nasty. When they burn their pads, it's bad.
Wow.
Very painful. And the dog is just going to go with you, right? Depending on where you run, the dogs can get into trouble with ice balls on their feet if it's winter. Mm-hmm. So booties or using Musher's Secret waxy pad covering. And then also, if you're running off trail and there are a lot of weeds, there are these things called foxtails. I don't know if you have them where you live, but there are these nasty little seeds that are pointy.
Yes.
Or grass lawns, they're sometimes called. And those are brutal, and they will migrate and cause terrible, terrible problems. So depending on where you run, check the paws when you're done.
Getting back to, we discussed dogs that run longer distance or fit in that criteria. Are there certain things that will help them nutritional-wise increase in their ability to recuperate from the runs or the exercise or the training that their owner have them going?
Yeah, that one depends, again, on what kind of distance you're doing with your dog. Mm-hmm. A couple of just rules of thumb. I don't run the dog with right after eating. That's dangerous. So make sure it's been, in my view, a couple of hours from the meal before you take him for a run.
Okay.
Secondly, don't let him guzzle a huge amount of water right before the run. That's not good. A little bit of water is fine, but a huge belly full of water is a bad idea, just like it is for people. So those are two just rules of thumb. And then as far as, the nutrition of canine athletes. Oh my gosh, that's a whole field of study.
Wow.
Joe Wachschlag is a big time nutrition guy in veterinary sports medicine, and he does a lot of work with the sled dogs. And the nutritional profile for sled dogs versus, say, an agility dog, totally different. Those sled dogs are consuming 3,000 calories, 4,000 calories a day. Easy. Wow. And these are like 40-pound dogs.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. Whereas an agility dog, you know, they're sprinters. So they can just eat regular good nutrition. Doesn't have to be anything more than typical good nutrition for a dog. And keep them slender, keep them fit, don't let them get overweight, and they do fine. But if you're going to be doing some intensive long-distance stuff, then you need to consult with a veterinary nutritionist who has an understanding of distance nutrition for canines.
Now, you touched on prosthetics, and it's something that you specialize in. Is it possible to take, or is it healthy for a dog that has prosthetics to take them on a run with you? Is there limitations with that?
In my view, the current technology makes it very difficult to do significant running with dogs who are in prosthetic limbs. Right. We do have those blade type devices that are available, but still the concussive interaction between the end of the limb, which is called the residuum, and the socket of the prosthesis, heavy running does worry me. It doesn't mean you can't do it, but I would really be monitoring that dog. My prosthetic patients run around in the yard like maniacs, and they go for runs, they go for walks and all that, but running is very concussive. And so I do that. I would be very cautious.
What's the most common injury that you see from your most active dogs that come or that you go to see to treat their injury? What's the most common injuries that you see?
Well, bar none, the most common injury is an ACL. In dogs, we call it the CCL, but the ACL is the most common orthopedic injury in dogs, bar none. Just super common. Now, that doesn't mean that running dogs are more predisposed to that injury, per se. That's not the case.
Okay.
A lot of reasons ACLs happen in dogs. From the standpoint of soft tissue injuries that are not ACLs, the most common is probably shoulder injury, and that's usually a biceps tendonitis or tendinopathy, more correctly, or a supraspinatus, so these shoulder muscles. And that's a lot of times dogs who are running downhill a lot and have really straight front legs by their conformation. And also dogs that are, you know, running fence lines and stopping and starting really fast, those dogs bang up their shoulders. For your audience and running dogs, it's the ones that do a lot of downhill running that really stress out their shoulders.
What do you think the most important thing a runner should consider before taking their dog out on a run with them?
Other than what we've talked about, in age, it's training.
Okay.
Just like any human runner, you can't just get up one day from hanging out on the couch and go run a 5K. And neither can dogs. But you'll try it. And they're usually, you know, unless they're overweight, that dogs have very good endurance. But that doesn't mean their soft tissue structures are prepared to do a serious run. They'll do it because they're game and they like to have fun. But that doesn't mean they're ready to do that kind of repetitive thing.
Right.
And so training is the number one thing.
Is there a regimen?
Yeah.
A safe regimen that a runner should put their dog on, and what would you suggest to starting off?
Depends on the age, of course. So let's assume the dog we're talking about is at least a year and a half old, and that it's not a small breed. So let's pick a border collie who's a year and a half old, but hasn't really been doing anything more than playing in the backyard and going on routine walks. So I would start a program where we might go do a run walk kind of a situation, so intervals, every other day. And I might start with a mile, and then every week or two, depending on how I'm perceiving the dog's behavior on that run, increase by maybe 10 to 15%.
Okay.
And again, I'm watching things like, is the dog staying up with me or lagging behind? What does that tongue look like as we get further into the run? So that helps me know we can go a little further. And so you just keep adding it. And I would also go every other day so that the dog's body gets a rest in between. Just like, you know, human runners, you shouldn't overtrain. We don't want to overtrain the dog. Predisposes to injury.
So basically being responsible.
Being very
Being
responsible. Because two things. One is dogs are there to please, no, almost always. And number two, their communication is different. So they don't cry when they're in pain, typically. What they do is they change their behavior. And so you got to watch for the nonverbal cues. They communicate. It's just not with words.
Right.
I would have people think about what they bring with them too. So bring water, bring poop bags, be a good citizen and bring poop bags. It's not a bad idea to bring a very small first aid kit. If I mean, really little, because you don't want a lot of weight, right?
Right.
But for sure, I encourage people to bring poop bags and water. And I would also say that you got to make sure your dog likes this, that it's fun for them. So my classic example is I adopted a shelter dog 2 years ago, and I thought he was going to be my dock diving dog. Well, it turns out he doesn't like water.
Wow.
So if your dog doesn't like to run, find something else it wants to do. You know, it's got to be fun for the dog.
And that's a good tip, because I think a lot of times, you know, depending on the breed, a person may think, well, an energetic breed will love running, but every dog, I mean, I've learned because I've had so many, they all have different personalities. So I couldn't agree with you more. Dr. Mitch, it's been great talking to you today. Thank you for taking the time to educate us more on running with our dogs. Good luck in all that you do. And, you know, hopefully you're out there running and pounding the pavement like we are as well.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you again to Dr. Mitch for contributing to this episode. If you like more information about canine sports medicine and mobility, please visit caninemobilitymed.com. Med is M-E-D. On the next episode, I speak with journalist Neil King Jr. One day, Neil set out to walk from Washington, D.C. to New York City, and his journey and story is a good one, so please check it out. If you like more content like this, please subscribe to my podcast and my YouTube channel. You just search RVA Running Man, and you should be able to find me, or you can follow me at my website, which is www.rvarunningman.com. Until next week, please be safe on the roads and trails, runners. Talk to you later. Peace.